Welcome to the fourth edition of SciPod Panel. Before we get started, after last week's show, there were some complaints that I might have been giving points away a bit too easily. Maybe just the mention of someone's name got a point. But
I noticed that.
In my defence, I wasn't very well, and just hearing the name Frank brightened my day.
Cheered you up.
Yeah. So I will try harder this week. I will be more discerning. You've all got to work to be a bit more subtle.
More selective.
Yes.
So people, you're not just going to be giving points away willy-nilly. People are going to have to work for those.
Anyway, I don't remember what I did the night before my 18th birthday, but it certainly wasn't anything like this.
What, hosting your own Formula One pod panel?
Yes. Our guest host for today and birthday boy tomorrow is Scott Woodwiss.
Yes, good evening, everyone. Welcome to SciPod Panel Episode 4. It's nice to see you. Yes, it is.
Give the guy a point already.
Yeah. Yes, good evening, and welcome to the fourth edition of SciPod Panel. As said, I'm Scott Woodwiss. This is the last time you'll hear me on voice as a 17-year-old. Next time, I'll be a man. But enough about that. Let's get on with Formula One.
What are you now?
Moving on. Yes. Okay, as usual, we have two teams of the three panelists. So let's talk to you the teams. On Team 1, which is Team UGE there, we have Dan Brunel.
Hello.
Gavin.
Hi.
And Dom.
Hello.
And on Team B, Team Sakon Yamamoto, we have Dr. V.
Evening.
Stephen Roy.
Hello.
And Andy Taylor.
Hello.
Excellent stuff. So we have our panelists, and let's take you through the rules. Simply, this is just going to be six different topics in each. Each one will have a name. And we're going to try some different question formats in this one. I've got two different types of question formats. The first one will be sort of a multi-question round, which is instead of being asked an all one question and then everyone answers that, I've come up with six separate questions, one for each person, so basically no one knows what they're going to get asked. So that makes it a bit unique, and they get put on the spot. And of course, the other one is obviously it's sort of a group question where everyone gets the same question and they just take it in turns to answer it. Christine, of course, is in charge on the pinger. Nice name. And just to take you through the noises you'll hear on comparing all the different answers. If you get a question right, you get a point and hear this. If you get a question that she doesn't like, if you give an answer that she doesn't like, you'll hear this. If you give an answer that she really doesn't like, you'll lose a point and hear this. You also get points if you make her laugh. And possibly lose points if you make her cry. And if you start yapping on too much, you'll get... Fantastic. Right. Before we begin, I have a request for the final question. Now, this is especially unique for the final question, or some people like to call it the killer question. So listen very carefully. I would like all of you to please think of one F1 personality at random. It can be anybody you like. And keep it to yourself. I'm going to ask you for your choices at the end. And it all will become clear when we get to the killer question.
Mysterious.
Okay, so we have the palace, we have the pinger, I have the questions, so let us begin. The first topic we have, I've called it Glauben Siederkraft. And if anyone doesn't know German...
That'd be me.
And me.
Yeah, then that translates as field of force. Now, this is called so because this topic is about... earlier this week, we had the pretty much obvious deal that was going to happen between Force India and McLaren. That means that Force India were going to supply for McLaren of Mercedes engines, Kerr systems, hydraulics, and gearboxes. Okay, so this is going to be a multi-question round. So let us start off with Mr. Dan Brunel. Nice, simple question to start off. Is the deal between Force India and McLaren a good thing or a bad thing for both teams and also the sport?
Well, I believe it's a really good deal for both teams because, you know, for McLaren, they basically just doubled their testing time with one deal. And with Force India, not only did they just get the engine deal, which they had with Ferrari, but they have the KERS transmission, everything else. It sounds like there's a lot more technical assistance from McLaren to Force India than there was from Ferrari. So I think for both teams, it's a really good deal. I think it'll really help Force India meet that goal that they have winning in 2009. I don't think they'll win, but at least they might get into lower points a little bit.
Okay, excellent stuff there. That's 2 points for Dan Brunel for Team UGE there. We're going to cross over to Team Sakon Yamamoto and start off with Mr. Dr. V. Your question is, Do you think, apart from the cost difference, there were other factors to Mallier choosing McLaren and Mercedes over Ferrari? And could the incidents with the factory team this season have been one of them?
Well, I don't think the incidents involving Ferrari were had much of a bearing. I think most of those were quite accidental. I don't buy into this idea that there was a conspiracy on Ferrari's part against Force India. I think they were probably a little bit peeved by the fact that rumour has it they weren't getting as good engines as Toro Rosso were. Toro Rosso were getting, supposedly, the latest and greatest Ferrari engines, and seemingly Force India had little bangers. And also, obviously, Ferrari weren't, for whatever reason, willing to share their care system with Force India. So from that perspective, it's quite sensible for them to move over and forge a new partnership with McLaren Mercedes, who are apparently being much more open, much more free with sharing their suppliers and their cars and their whole drivetrain and their engine and everything.
Okay, excellent stuff there. Thank you very much, Dr. V. Now then, moving on to the brilliant Gavin, who I considered last week to be actually, we're like brothers because we like the 2009 car. We'll move on. Okay, Gavin, your question is... Martin Whitmarsh, your question, Gavin. Martin Whitmarsh said that he is adamant Force India will not be a McLaren B team. Do you think both teams will stick to that agreement, or will we see in the future a Force India with McLaren aerodynamics on it?
That really it really depends firstly on who drives for Force India next year. If we get Vijay Mallya picking the drivers and it's still Sutil and Fizzy Keller, then I don't think there'll be much of a B team. But I have a strange feeling that I think Paul de Resta or Pedro de la Rosa is going to end up in that car, and that will be the start of a long road down where they'll become basically, as Toro Rosso are, a McLaren B team, where they'll just move over and block the Ferraris so McLaren can get more points.
Okay, excellent stuff. Thank you very much, Gavin. Moving on to Stephen Roy, probably one of the wisest people on Side Podcast, I'd say. Your question, Stephen. Vijay Mallya has stated that his ambitions for the team, and they are with the goal to challenge for wins in 2010, have at least one car on the podium at the inaugural Indian Grand Prix in 2011. Is Mallya being overambitious, or are his future prospects realistic?
Can't see him winning in 2010. Ferrari are still going to be strong. McLaren are still going to be strong. You've also then got BMW and Renault, who, you know, by that stage will be in a far better position than they are now. So the idea that Force India are going to be in a position to win races is unlikely. As has been said before, if Paul de Resta goes and drives for them, and we find that this operations director that they have from McLaren turns out to be a McLaren guy there who's there to be educated, then McLaren may want to put, you know, a few more other people in there under him and start, you know, effectively using Force India as a training situation for them. If they do that, then, you know, they will have access to all McLaren's information, and then there's a possibility they could win races in a couple of years. But Force India on their own, no. I mean, they may get a podium in 2011, but there's no way they'll win races by 2010.
Okay, thank you very much, Stephen. Very valid points. Now moving on to Dom. First time on SciPod Panel, so welcome to you. Your first question on everyone's SciPod Panel is, before the deal was confirmed, news came in that in a management reshuffle within the team, Mike Gascon and Colin Collard would be leaving. Now, do you think this was a bad or harsh decision, or was it the right thing to do in order for the team to be able to move forward?
I think it's probably a bad decision, because Mike Gascon in particular has made some pretty good decisions on strategy for in the past, especially for Spyker. I think it was he managed to get Marcus Winkelhock leading the race somehow a couple of years ago. So he's made some particularly good strategy decisions, and the team might be lost without him, but we'll have to wait and see.
Okay, so on to the final person on Team Sakon Yamamoto. It's Mr. Andy Taylor, brilliant host last week. I'm hoping that I can match his brilliance. And your question is, Martin McMarsh has also pointed out that McLaren would advise Force India on driver selection, but not be directly involved with it. Now, if you were Mallya, which two drivers would you choose and why?
Ooh, I'm tempted to say Fernando Alonso. Does he have to be a current driver?
I guess it could be any active Formula One driver, I suppose, either a tester or a current driver. But it's really anyone you like, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I'd say Fernando Alonso just to see the reaction on Ron Dennis's face. Oh, probably Rubens Barrichello because he probably needs a drive.
Okay, brilliant. Well, that's the end of the first round. So, Christine, are you ready with the scores?
Okay, at the end of round one, Team UGE Day have 3 points and Team Sekon Yamamoto have 4, and Scott, as host, has 2.
It's got off to a flying start there.
Okay, excellent stuff there. Now we're going to move on to round two. I call this round Back to the Future, Forward with the Past. Now, Williams became the first team this week also to reveal a 2009 spec front wing for real, as in not a virtual rendering, an actual cosmetic real front wing. They were also able to give a virtual preview of their 2009 car in their factory TV show, along with Autosport also producing a rendered prediction of what a 2009 Ferrari might look like. Now, with this subject in much debate over both the form and function of these aero parts, and boy, don't I know it on these forums, on this site, I would like to ask everyone for their personal opinions on the wings, whether they will work or not, and if the FIA will be prepared to take full responsibility if they didn't. So we're going to start with Team UGE Day again, and we're going to throw this one to Gavin first. What's your opinion on the 2009 wings?
By themselves, I'm not too keen on the rear wing. I kind of like the front wing, especially the fact you can adjust the angle while following another car. Do I think they'll work? Probably not, because Formula One cars being so complicated and so sensitive and on a knife edge, there'll be so many factors affecting following that I don't think the wings themselves will do it. I actually think the wings are really designed to maximize sponsorship coverage as opposed to proper aerodynamics, because they're quite wide and good for logos as opposed to proper thin, low dynamic wings. Will the FIA be accountable for it? Probably not, because they can manage to brush everything else off and say they tried, so they'll probably just brush this one off and just try something else instead.
Okay, thank you very much, Gavin. Very good points. Now let's pass that over to Stephen Roy. What are your opinions on this subject?
The wings have been designed for sponsorship. I don't think there's much doubt about that. The back wing just looks ridiculous. To make a thin width or a full width wing with a thin cord, it would have the same area, be able to generate the same downforce without any difficulty. The front wing extending in front of the front wheels is insane. We had that in the late 80s, early 90s, and every race someone ended up in the pits because they'd made a little bit of contact, they snapped the nose wing, and the downforce was all out of balance. So they ended up having to disappear off into pits to change the nose. Tony Purnell has already said that the teams have recovered more downforce than they thought they would. So they targeted next year's downforce package to have 50% of this year's downforce. They're already forecasting 80%, and we haven't had winter testing yet. And as for the final point, will they take responsibility? Well, has Max taken responsibility for grooves? When grooves were introduced originally, the theory was that they would make the front wing less effective. There's a whole argument at the time where everyone said, if you want to stop the problems we have, reduce the size of the front wings. And Max come up with this whole load of bull that the aerodynamics of the grooves, you get so many spirals coming off there, it would affect the front wings. So he was asked at the time, if the grooves don't work in this way, will you change the front wings? He said, yes. And he didn't. So no, they're not going to take responsibility for anything.
Team Roy, they've been told he's been talking too long. Now, on to the next person. Next person we've got is Mr. Dan Brunel. What are your thoughts on the new wings?
I really don't understand. The racing was so good this year. Why are they keep on changing the regulations every year? I imagine cost down, but they keep on changing the regulations, which add more cost to the procedures. As to the wings, the rear wing, I really don't like. I really like how the cars look now. It's really nice, low, sleek. You know, why can't we just get rid of, you know, just make it that this, the front wing and the rear wing are the main downforce element, and all other downforce elements are banned? It just really bothers me. As for the front wing, Steve Roy has a really good point about the front, about it extending past the wheels. As for the rear wing, it just kind of looks Muppetish. It's just kind of ugly.
Okay, yep, thanks very much for that, Dan. Let's now go over to Mr. Andy Taylor.
Well, I quite like the new car, actually. I've not looked too hard, but I think that picture of the Williams that we were all looking at last week, it looks okay. But the thing that struck me about the racing was I was actually looking at Nigel Mansell and Ayrton Senna racing in Monaco in 1991 last night. And what really surprised me, or reminded me, was just how close Mansell was to Senna's rear end most of the way around the circuit, particularly through the tunnel. So if we're going to go back to that kind of racing, then I think that's going to be good. Whether or not it happens, I guess, remains to be seen.
Okay, excellent stuff, Andy. Thank you very much. Now we're going to move on to Dom for Team UGE Day. What are your thoughts?
I think we'll probably get used to the wings. We'll have to get used to them. I don't think they'll make that much of a difference to the racing. I think the return to slicks will make a much bigger difference. I think they're probably just there for sponsorship reasons. I can't see how they'll help that much.
Thank you very much, Dom. Very valid points. And finally, on to Mr. Dr. B, the lovely doctor. What are your thoughts, please?
Well, I don't think so much that the rear wing in particular has been designed for sponsorship reasons, because it's quite narrow, really, and I think the sponsor logos will probably look quite squashed up. But I still think I'm not a fan of these new wings. I didn't have a problem with the aerodynamics, you know. I like all the flick-ups and things. I think they give the Formula One car quite a distinctive look. And, you asked in your question there, do I think the wings are going to work? I certainly hope they do work. It wouldn't be very good if they started collapsing all the time. I think in that sense, it'll probably work. But it's a valid point that was made earlier about the size of the front wing. I think we're going to see a lot of front wings being lost in a little first corner incident or some kind of little problem. I mean, I can't see how Nico Rosberg's going to see out the season without losing any front wings. But as for, they've designed these wings supposedly to increase overtaking, but they're also introducing at the same time this ridiculous care system, which is without a doubt going to spread out the field, so we're going to have less overtaking. We've just had the closest season in Formula One's history, and they're now deciding to change it all, and I don't see how that's going to work.
Yeah, thanks very much, Dr. B. These front wings are pretty good. I mean, I quite like them, but you can't help thinking that if they're going to be that fragile, they're going to start pretty much, these front wings are going to start flexing. As Ron Dennis calls it, feathering.
Give the guy at least a bucket, a handful of points for that. Come on.
Right. So that's the end of round three. Brilliant answers, everybody. Well done. Doing great. So if Christine's ready with the scores, we can hand over. So how are the teams doing so far, Christine?
At the end of the second question, Team UGE Day have 10 points and Team Sakon Yamamoto have 10 points. Scott now has 5.
Right. Now then, on to question, topic number three, or round number three, rather. This one I've called Testing Times and Tryouts. The off-season has officially begun, and very soon the first of the official group winter test sessions will be in full swing. Of course, this means a lot of focus on data collection for next season, as well as sizing up potential drivers for 2009 for the teams who still have places to fill. Now, this will be a multi-question round, so obviously one question for each person. So, let's start with Team UGEA. Let's go with Dom, first of all. Your question is, how crucial will this off-season be in terms of getting to grips with the new regulations?
I think it'll be much more important for teams like Ferrari and McLaren, who have been focusing on the season they're actually competing in, rather than teams like Williams or Honda, who have been concentrating on 2009 all year. It will still be important for those teams because they have a lot of work to do over the off-season to try and keep up with the rest of the field, especially the Honda, who need to make a big leap during the off-season.
Okay, so moving on to the second person we have. I'm going to go with Stephen Roy for this one. And your question is, teams like Honda and BMW have been working on their car for next year, most of the season, if not all season. Now, how much of an advantage, if any at all, will that give on the teams that have been otherwise occupied in 2008, such as McLaren and Ferrari with their championship battle?
I don't think it'll give them an advantage against the top teams, because teams like McLaren have actually got three design teams at any one time. There's a team who designed this year's car, who run it through the whole season. They've had a team since last year's car was written off, who've been working on next year's car. And they have a third team who are working on future technologies. And Ferrari will have exactly the same setup. So it's not going to be an advantage against those guys. It may be an advantage against the likes of Renault, who obviously hit a bit of form late in the season and may have sort of transferred some resources into making the best of this year's car when they saw they had a chance of doing something with it. And maybe also the likes of Toyota, who may have stuck with this year's car a bit longer. But it won't give them any kind of advantage against the top teams. They're just going to be the same as they do every season. They're just going to disappear into the distance.
Excellent stuff, Stephen. Thank you. Now I'm going to go to the team UGE. We're going to go to Gavin. Quite a crucial question, this. Toro Rosso are holding their driver assessment at Jerez for the next 3 days, which is now, this has been programmed on Sunday, so it's Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, with Sebastian's Bourdais and Wayne facing off with Takuma Sato. Now, who do you want to take the two race seats, and who do you think will get them?
Well, I definitely want Sebastian Bourdais in the team. I'm not just saying that to get points. He's had a really unlucky year. He should have done a lot better than he has for lots of reasons out of his control. Spa, he was unlucky with his tyres. Monza, he had that random problem on the grid. And of course, there's Fuji, where he should have scored points and got that mysterious penalty. So definitely him. The other driver, I'm not a huge fan of Takuma Sato. I think he's pretty much just, it's like the equivalent to Nakajima. He's just the Honda driver that was put in to satisfy Honda. I can't see why he's going to Toro Rosso other than maybe to get Red Bull to get their sponsorship for that 7-Eleven in Japan chain. I can't remember the name of it. It was something station or something. So I quite like the look of someone like Sebastian Buemi. So he's done not too bad this year, and I think he's also done well in A1GP, so I think I'd have next year, 2009, two Sebastians once again.
Okay, excellent stuff, Gavin. Brilliant stuff. Now moving on to Dr. V. Honda are the only other team still looking for drivers, and on announcing their program of drivers for the first official winter test, Rubens Barrichello was left out of it. Could this be an omen for his unfortunate and possibly impending departure from F1, or could Honda just be giving him an extended holiday for returning to driving duties?
Well, I doubt Rubens Barrichello actually wants a holiday. He's probably quite worried about his job, and I think that's wrong, actually. Even though he's the oldest driver in the grid at the moment, I see no reason why he shouldn't have a drive next season. He's outperformed Jenson Button this year, and I certainly think he has at least another season in him anyway.
Okay, great stuff, Dr. V there. Moving on to Team UGE and Dan Brunel. Five times World Rally Champion Sebastian Loeb will be present at the group test as well, representing Red Bull as kind of a reward for his record-breaking achievement, and also Citroën being sponsored by Red Bull in the World Rally Championship. With past experience in a Renault last year, what kind of form do you think he will show? And despite his age, could he even be in the line for some kind of driving role in F1 in the future?
You're never going to get Alonso out of that team, obviously. Nelson Piquet, if he continues to form from last year, you could possibly see them switching. It might, to be perfectly honest, I don't really follow Rally that much. I don't know much about Loeb. But, I have nothing against older drivers coming on the grid, because I think we've kind of gotten up got deviated with Lewis and Alonso coming in at such a young age, that we expect, these young drivers to come in to be superstars right away. You have people like Sebastian Bourdais and, Loeb, or I even think they were giving Rossi, they have previous experiences in other racing series, but there's a little bit of a maturity behind the wheel that we don't see with a younger driver. So I think it's you're never going to beat Alonso in that first seat anyway. Why not?
Okay, great stuff, Dan. And moving on finally to Andy Taylor. Nice simple question to finish off. Which team are you guys be looking out for or expecting the most from this winter, and why?
Honda, because they're the ones who've already basically been working on their car for next year. So I'd like to see some sort of big improvements straight away from them. I think that's what I'm looking out for.
Okay, that's the end of that round. Personally, yeah, I probably think that it'll be interesting to see the battle between the two Sebastians. But I can almost imagine an argument between them. Sebastian Brayman will probably become something like, well, I've been a Rebel test driver for ages, so I think I should deserve it. But then Bordeaux will probably come up with something like, yeah, well, I'm a four-time champ car champion and I wear glasses.
Can I just... I'd just like to make a comment about the other Sebastian we mentioned, Sebastian Loeb, that... I'd very much like him to do Michel Valiant and go to Le Mans and win that, just like in the cartoon books. If guys don't know, Michel Valiant is an old French comic book hero who races in Formula One and Le Mans and stuff like that. So I look at Sebastian Loeb and think he's quite similar in some ways.
In the fact that he looks like him, or in the fact that that's where his life's gone?
No, he's a multi-skilled, talented driver. And in the film that just came out a few years ago, he went from rally driving to Le Mans, and Sebastian Loeb has actually raced at Le Mans, and he didn't do too badly. So it would be quite nice to see him in a Peugeot going for a Le Mans victory. That'd be awesome.
Whose drive is he going to take?
Would it not?
Whose drive is he going to take, though? You've gone into dangerous ground there.
I've got quite a good idea who he might take.
Go on.
Certain Mr. Chris. Yay!
I was just thinking the same thing.
Hey.
Could have a team with four Sebastian drivers.
Oh,
sounds like some sort of boy band, the Four Sebs.
Okay, excellent stuff. That's the end of round three. Brilliant answers there, as always. So, Christine, if you're ready with the scores, how are the teams doing at the moment?
Okay, Team UGE Day have 18 points, and Team Sakon Yamamoto have 16, and Scott is now on 9.
Now we're going to move on to round four, and this is actually a throwing question, really, from Mr. Dan Brunel. If you noticed it on the Cyclocast wiki, he posted something which he called a research question. And I thought it was an excellent question, so I decided to add it into tonight's panel. And the question is, in fact, the round is called Playtime with Formula One. All become clear in the question.
I'm enjoying these titles.
Next year, the video game developers Codemasters will release the first Formula One official Formula One game in almost 3 years, with the last one being 2006. And one of the interesting things that they've done is to appeal to Formula One fans alike, all around the world, is they've opened up their forums and they've asked, and they generally ask themselves, Codemasters, for input from actual Formula One fans and racing gamers for what they'd like in the game. Now, in past F1 games, you've had features such as extra classic F1 cars and extra circuits, and even unique little things like a safety car race and a night race at Monaco. The question is, if you could put shit into an F1 video game, what would that be? And we're going to start that one with Gammon. Start off with that one.
So what features would I want in a Formula One game? Well, the first one I'd want is what I call the Ferrari International Assistance feature, where you press a button. When you're driving the red car, you press a button, and any non-Ferrari driver is either randomly penalized or just falls out of the way for you, so you can drive ahead. The next feature is called the teammate button, where if you're crap and no good and you can't get ahead of your teammate, you just call on the radio and then your teammate falls out of the way, just getting past. The third one is the random penalty FIA function, where just to spice things up during the racing, at any point during the game, the computer will decide to hand out a random penalty for no apparent reason, differing from all the other races, thus mystifying the results and not ensuring that the right people were in the right places.
Okay, great stuff from Gavin there. Now we're going to move on to Mr. Andy Taylor. What features would you like to see in an F1 video game?
I think there should be a Martin Brundle grid walk round where you play the driver and you have to avoid Martin Brundle as he comes down. And you have to dodge between Bernie Eccleston and random celebrities from the world of entertainment who haven't really got a clue why they're on the grid, but Martin might get distracted by them if you push them into...
Okay, so the next one we're going to move on to is Dr. V. If you had free control of F1 game, what would you like to put in?
Well, if there's one thing we've learned about Formula 1 from watching the television coverage this season, it's that racing, you shouldn't bother with that. It's all about what the fathers are doing in the garage. So I would have a Formula 1 entourage mode where you play the part of the fathers of Formula 1 drivers. So level 1, that's called John Button mode, and there you have to create your avatar for John Button, and you have to wear the loudest shirt possible, and you get bonus points for the tan. Level 2 is the Anthony Hamilton mode, where you have to tap the buttons as furiously as possible to give the most intense stare imaginable. And level 3 is the boss round, and that is the Ferrari premature celebration. And you have to gracefully calm yourself down when you're told that your man hasn't won. And if you can't manage to do that, a Ferrari mechanic runs full pelt towards the wall and destroys the garage. Why did that lose me points? I was proud of that.
That's the cruelest.
it was a great answer, but unfortunately...
You gain points up until the last round, the boss level.
Alrighty, excellent stuff, Dr. V, although unfortunately I did lose your points, so apologies for that. Moving on to Team EGE Day, and the actual creator of the question, Dan Brunel. So Dan gets to answer his own questions. So what would you have in an F1 video game?
Well, the fun thing that I would absolutely love is that if you can control the champagne celebration, like if you want to, you know, just stick the champagne bottle in the ear of Lewis Hamilton, you can do that, or do a weird Fernando Alonso backwards somersault off the top podium. That would be great. And then actually, in a serious point, none of the games have ever really serious manager mode where you can develop the car, you know, deal with the FIA with changes in regulations, you get good enough to beat Ferrari. So those are two things I would add. Yay!
Okay, great stuff. And moving on to the final person we've got is Mr. Stephen Roy. What would you have in an F1 game?
I think I'm going to sort of do a rip-off of the McLaren Rocket Red t-shirts that they wear when they win. So as soon as your car passes the line, if you win, it changes into Rocket Red. Then I'm going to have a random scandal generator. Now, it's not going to come up with anything like the stuff that Max can come up with, but put that in the middle of things just to stir it up. But my pièce de résistance, which was the first thing that popped into my mind when you said this, when you're following another car around a corner, I'm going to have a little thing extend out of the nose of the car and activate a tram line on the end of it, so you put the other guy's gearbox straight into two gears.
Unfortunately, we've had to say goodbye to Dom because he's been coming off Skype a couple of times. So in his place, we have the other half of the side podcast, which is, of course, me. Not as in myself.
This is not confusing at all.
Stupid name again.
Yeah, we tried to get Ollie to stand in a super sub, but he's unfortunately unavailable too. So I'm apparently doing...
You're our last choice.
I am literally the last in the line.
Yeah.
And so therefore I have to do an impression of Ollie doing an impression of Dom in order to answer this question. So if you'd like to fire the question at me, Scott, I will do my best to answer on both of their behalves.
So, me, if you had a choice to put in F1 VA game, what would you put in?
I think I would put in a load of random races that may or may not be on the calendar by the time I get there. So I will have a French round, which may or may not be removed, depending on whether they can afford it. And then I will have a Canadian Grand Prix round, which might or might not disappear during this season or the next season. I will have phantom races appearing here, there and everywhere on the grounds that Bernie has agreed races with people who can't afford his demands. So that's what I'd put in. Random F1 seasons, depending on where we are and how much money there is in the global climate.
Okay, excellent stuff. That's the end of that round. I mean, personally, if I was to put in something for a round, I'd probably put the Bernie Eccleston Run for a Raincoat Challenge. Okay, of course, at a rain shower, but he has to try and find his way. On to round... before we move on, Christine, have you got the scores, please?
At the end of that round, things are really close. Team UGE Day have 25 and Team Sakon Yamamoto have 25. Scott now has 11.
Okay, so on to round 5, which is I call Chinese Whispers. It was announced this week that the Shanghai circuit could quite possibly be in danger of hosting the Chinese Grand Prix due to its contract running out in 2010. Now, what this is a group question, so everyone gets to answer this. What are your opinions on this? And if Shanghai were to lose the GP, where else could it be held? Or could the race be axed from the calendar altogether? So, let's go with starting off with Team Yuji Ido. We're going to start that one with Dan Brunner.
You know, F1 and Bernie are finally realizing that if you have a large amount of races that's away from your center of the of your fandom, it's not a really good idea because you anger the fans back at the places where you took the races away from. In, you know, China, I don't think they've ever even gotten half of the pop. I mean, half of the full capacity of the state of the autodrome there. And the same thing, I believe, with Malaysia. So, personally, I'd rather have it axed. The fans aren't there. I don't think that the government's slowly realizing it's not going to happen. And, frankly, it's really sad that, you know, Canada, the U.S., France, and pops, you know, that have probably, I would say, represent maybe 25 to 40% of the F1 base, and their races are under threat every year. And it's, I don't think that's very fair. So I think, hopefully, this will be an indicator that Bernie and all those guys is, you know, it's nice that you're expanding to places like, you know, India and Singapore, but at the same time, you got to realize, you got to have races where the fans are in order for races to make money.
Okay, great stuff, Dan. Thanks for that. Now we're going to move on to Dr. V. What's your opinions on this?
I don't think I'll miss the Chinese Grand Prix. It's not a great circuit. This year's race was an absolute bore, and there are just no fans in the grandstands. And the Chinese organizers of the race literally can't give the tickets away. They've turned the grandstands into lots of billboards, and I just don't see the point of it. And I think it's quite ironic that we've got so many circuits like Silverstone that would love to have a race, and Bernie's taken it away from them. And now we've got the Chinese authorities who are kind of wanting to get rid of their race, and Bernie's desperate to keep it there. I'm just, you know, I'm finished with the Chinese Grand Prix. I don't want to see it anymore.
Okay, great stuff. Thanks for that, Dr. V. Now we're going to go over to me on Team Yuji Ido. What's your thoughts on the China situation?
Well, I'll tell you something, I don't think I can follow up a line like I'm finished with the Chinese Grand Prix. I don't know where else I can go with that one. I think it's sinking without a trace. I think they got the designs wrong. I think they got the development wrong. It's a huge structure built on marshland. And I think basically the buildings and the track are slowly succumbing to the forces of nature. And I don't think it's got anything to do with the fact that no one can afford the ticket prices. I just don't think the venue's going to be there in a couple of years. If Formula One cars keep racing on it, every time they arrive there, the cambers are steeper in the corners, the bumps are steeper, and as most of the track is basically disappearing, I suspect the Earth will reclaim that land for its own, and there will be no more place to have a race there. Whether or not Bernie will find somewhere else to host it in the country, I suspect they probably have already been burnt. They've had their fingers burnt. They didn't get anything out of it that they wanted to get out of it. They need to start a grassroots motorsport. That's what they don't have. They have no local heroes. They have no local engine manufacturers, car manufacturers. They have nothing. They have no intrinsic interest in that sport. And until they're any good at it, then there's not going to be any interest from China. So there are places that are much more deserving of this sport than China. And Bernie, Bernie needs to look elsewhere.
Okay, brilliant insight there, me. Thank you very much. Moving on to Team Sakai Yamamoto, let's go with Stephen Roy on this one. What's your thoughts on this?
I think apart from anything else, the first corner complex with all that spiral nonsense, there's no place for that in F1. So they should never have been allowed a license to run a race in the first place. The marshland's obviously a problem. You really must have some form of motor racing industry there. You know, a junior formula, you need to have something which is going to use a facility like that for the whole year. That way you gradually build up to people getting an interest in it, and you can sort of then roll it out so that you can have schools going in and seeing, you know, normal racing, or you get young kids going in and seeing normal racing, getting enthused, and then you've got a chance of actually building an audience for Formula One there. If you're going to take the race away from China, the only place in the region where you could possibly have it, and it'd be a stretch, is to have the race at Macau, which I think would be a great circuit to see Formula One on. Whether anyone would be left to finish the race is a different matter. probably be carnage everywhere. But I can't think of another track on the whole of China or the whole of Chinese territory that could hold a race. Obviously, it'd be better if we had a race in Canada or the race in Silverstone or, you know, any of the sort of sensible, logical, traditional places to have a race. But that's looking less and less unlikely. So it's down to Bernie to do something sensible for a change.
Excellent stuff, Stephen. Thank you for that. Now moving on to Team UGEDA and on to Gavin. What do you think about China and possibly losing the race?
I really don't care for the Chinese Grand Prix. And I really don't care for all these identical Tilke tracks with the same corners, the same long straight with a hairpin, the same twisty bit, the same curvy sections leading onto another straight. They have no character. They are wide. They are soulless. They have no history. They have no support. Malaysia costs $40 to get a ticket and nobody can go there. That's just incredible. I can't believe that. And at the same time, we're losing all these classic racetracks with fantastic races. I'm so sad that we've lost Canada, because when I used to live in New Zealand, I used to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning on a Monday to watch that race, when I used to have to go to work the same day, because it was such a good race. And I really hope at some point we have a bit of a backlash against these money tracks and go back to the classic racing, because quite frankly, we don't need any more Valencias or Chinas or maybe even Malaysias.
Great points there, Gavin. Thanks for that. Finally, for Team Cycling Yamamoto, we're going to go with Andy Taylor. So, Andy, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I think I'm in agreement with most other people, really. I mean, anywhere that isn't designed by Tilke would be good. I really don't understand why Bernie doesn't appear to be doing basic market research first. We go to the country and say, have you heard of Formula One? You know, if I mention the name Mike Schumacher to you, what, if they don't say seven-time Formula One winner, then you know you move on to the next country. I actually think that we should find out where Herman Tilke lives and go around his house and dig up his back garden and just tarmac it over. And how he likes.
That's a great point there, Andy, to finish up on the...
Can I introduce a concept to you guys? The Tilke Grown. The Tilke Grown. It's what you define as when you see a new circuit announced for or a new venue for a calendar, and you say, and it says, new exciting circuit designed by Tilke, and everyone who reads it just goes, oh, no.
I like that.
Before we move on to the killer question, let's go to Christine with the scores. So, Christine, how is it looking at the moment?
At the end of that round, Team UGEDA have 32 points and Team Sakon Yamamoto have 33. Scott is still on 11.
Okay, thanks for that. So, this is it, the killer question. At the beginning, I asked each of you to think of one F1 personality in their head. That's what I asked them. And remember it for this point in the show. Well, now, for the time to reveal your choices, so we'll go down to you one by one, and I will ask you for your personality. So we're going to start off with me.
Just a formula, past or present? And I don't know what I've got to do until I say it.
I think to make it more exciting, should we try present F1 personalities?
Ah, can I have Montoya? Because he sort of just left. Has he got to be Formula
1? Sure,
okay. I'll go with Montoya.
Okay, Montoya.
Doesn't he count for two?
Okay, so that's me's choice. On to Dr. V. Who have you chosen?
I'll choose Nick Heidfeld.
Nick Heidfeld. Okay, Nick Heidfeld for Dr. V. Dan Brunel, who have you chosen?
I'll take Kimi Raikkonen.
Okay, interesting one. Going for Stephen Roy now. Who have you chosen?
Mike Gascoigne.
And Gavin for UGE Day.
David Coulthard.
Okay, and finally, Andy Taylor.
I'm going to go for Ron Dennis.
This is the moment I reveal the killer question. I called it, did I really say that? As we all know, the end of the Formula 1 season brings on the party atmosphere. Celebrate the end of another year's racing. Now, with partying comes alcohol. And with that comes a tendency to possibly become just a little bit drunk. I would like you to do an impression of your chosen personality and what they would say if they had a bit too much to drink.
No. Oh, it's always good to get impressions on the show.
Make them think the morning after, did I really say that? I have also put down here, I'm not sure it'd be really relevant, points should be awarded for accent.
Yeah.
How funny you are. So me, you have to do an impression.
Do I have to go first?
Yes. So yes, the impression of one Montoya drunk and what he would say that would make him think, oh no, why did I say that?
We've been here before. I can't do impressions, you know. I wasn't on the show.
It's all Dom's fault.
I blame Dom absolutely entirely. Right. Well, you know, that Ron Dennis, he's like, oh, I can't stand that man with the thing in the car. And, oh, give me the car that was so slow. That slow car. I can't go any faster with that car that was slow and car and things. I can have a faster car.
You know, that was great because you even had the pie in the mouth.
I did. That was Montoya eating and being drunk. I'm sorry. It's the best I can do.
Great stuff. A drunk impression of Juan Montoya there. Now, on to Dr. V with your drunk impression of Nick Heidfeld.
Well, I think Nick Heidfeld, he must be frustrated after being in a decade almost in Formula One. He's never really been in a competitive car, and he's getting at the end of his tether, and he's caught off guard because he's drunk. He's talking to his boss, Mario Tyson, and this is what he says. I'm getting fat blasted for Wowie one day.
Yeah, great stuff from Dr. V there, so... On to Dan Brunel with his impression of, I believe it was Kimi Räikkönen, was it?
The car was very, drink was very good, it was a nice party.
Oh!
Don't stop.
How do you do an impression of a man that doesn't talk?
that's brilliant, well, thank you.
Drink was really good.
On to Stephen Roy, so his drunk impression of Mike Gascoigne.
Oh, everyone knows Gascoigne is known as the Rottweiler, so I guess this is a bit of Tremaining as well thrown in for good measure. You can't sack me.
Also a point for Tremaining.
All your words collided there.
Yeah. Okay, so on to Gavin for Team Ego.
Oh, it was David Coulthard. Oh, I've got a good one then. David Coulthard drunk. If that man doesn't get out of the way, I'm going to kick six shades of beep out of him.
Well done for the self-censorship there.
Well, that was brilliant. And to finish off this killer question, it's Andy Taylor.
What would Ron do?
Would Ron be drunk? That's the first question.
Does he lie drink?
he might do a bit of drunken... calling up on the mobile phone. You know, is Fernando?
But Ron would never get in the vicinity of having a few drinks that could cause some merriment, because that would be against the likelihood of the team being successful, because we are a winning team.
Or any fun.
And we don't have any fun because we put everything behind winning. That's Ron Dennis not being drunk.
Although, aren't they sponsored, which is slightly ironic, they're sponsored by a whiskey company.
Mm. If I may, I'd just like to do my impression of who I've chosen. I think you'll like it. It's I've chosen to do Bernie Eccleston.
Brilliant.
Now, and the scenario is he's at the end of the party, and he's sat with the boss of the FFSA, of course, Ryan Manucure. And he probably says something to him like, you know, I've always said that your circuit's a load of rubbish, but I have to say that, really, I absolutely love Manucure. Again.
Well done, Scott. You've obviously been practicing all week.
I tell you what, I don't just love Manucure, I love you.
See, I'd love to hear someone do an impression of Rob Smedley speaking to Massa after the race when he was drunk.
Don't.
Okay, so that's so at the end of the last round, indeed the panel. So Christine, what are the final scores? Who is tonight's winner?
It's been a very close competition all the way through, but at the end of this panel, Team Yuji Ide have 41 points and Team Sakon Yamamoto have 40. Scott has 15.
Yay!
15 points.
Yep.
That must be the highest scoring host of all time.
That is the highest scoring host.
Wow. Sorry. Yeah. I don't even know which team I was in. Did I win or did I lose?
You won, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, you won. Because you were Dom/Ollie/me/ Super Sub.
There's 5 people in that team. No wonder they won.
I have to say, whoever's team Scott is on, next on There's an Impression, I'm being in that team. That's yes. It. That's all. There's no question
we've,
about
we've
it.
We've had two brilliant impressions.
He can do cars and he can do people. Did you enjoy hosting the show, Scott?
I did enjoy it. I was a little bit nervous at the beginning, but I have enjoyed it. And I'm glad you guys enjoyed my questions. And I've had a really good time.
I think you did a brilliant job, especially because our technical issues got in the way somewhat.
They were insurmountable in some cases.
Yes.
But you got through it with aplomb, and it's much appreciated. And thank you, everybody, for your patience today.
Yeah.
We'll try and sort it out for next week.
And Scott, it's 12:11 a.m. in Denmark, so happy birthday, buddy.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you very much. Thank you.